Welcome to the Micro College Podcast. I'm Jacob Hunt. I'm the director of Thoreau College. We're a micro college located in beautiful southwestern Wisconsin. If you're listening to this, we're recording it in early September 2024. If you are interested in being a part of the Thoreau College experiment, please check out our Metamorphosis Gap Semester programs. We are currently accepting applications for the spring semester 2025, which begins in late January and runs through the end of May. In the next few months, we'll be opening up applications for the summer, the field school in July of 2025, and the fall of 2025 Metamorphosis Gap Semester. We also offer the classes of the Driftless Folk School, Folk Arts, Homesteading Skills, ecological literacy, and a performance season centered on the Viroqua Shakespeare Festival happens every June. So check it out, thoreaucollege.org. So today on the podcast, we are excited to be able to speak with Hannah Schwartz, who is part of one of the founders of the Riverflow community in Moncton, Vermont. Hannah Schwartz formed and co-founded Heartbeat Life Sharing in 2000 in Vermont. She served as the community's executive director and development director, drawing on her lifelong experience with social therapy and her commitment to bringing the life-sharing philosophy to community-based care for adults with developmental disabilities in Vermont. Hannah dedicated over 20 years to Heartbeat, and during her tenure there, joined national and statewide conversations and action to expand meaningful options for adult life, removing barriers and increasing opportunities for adults with developmental disabilities. Hannah pursued a master's in special education at Antioch, New England, graduating in 2016. In 2020, Hannah felt called to leave Heartbeat Life Sharing to deepen and expand her understanding of diversity, equity, justice, and inclusion through a social work and policy lens at the University of Vermont in their Master's of Social Work program. Hannah has dedicated her working life to learning and embodying alternative, diverse systems of care with a special focus on neurology. She is a social researcher, innovator, and leader in cutting-edge thinking, who is dedicated to encouraging all to reach their very highest potential. Thank you for joining us today, Hannah.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, here on the Micro College Podcast, we always begin with people's early adulthood and biography during the period around the age of the students who we work with here at Thoreau College. So I'm wondering if you could cast your mind your memory back to when you were 18, 19, 20 years old, and just give us a picture of where you were during that period. What were the big influences on your life, and how has that shaped what you're doing now?
I went to Warren Wilson College in North Carolina.
Great. Yeah.
So was very, very blessed to be in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And I also was pregnant and had a child in those years. So I got through my first semester of 20 credits at Warren Wilson and then had a baby and went back.
Wow.
So I have kind of an unusual early adulthood that included motherhood. And I also think it was deeply empowering around advocacy. I was had to kind of wiggle my way through traditional education as a single mom and a young mom and all the judgments that come with all of that.
Sure.
So I learned quickly and with some very challenging lessons what it meant to stand up for myself and advocate. And also kind of learned about judgment from other people, what that felt like as a projection. So that was my young advocacy years, and
Yeah.
jumped right into adult life, really.
Yeah, parenthood will do that. Yeah, and in the midst of going to college, that's a unique combination there.
It was. Ward Wilson was graceful. They gave me what they called the rabbit hutch at the time, which was a little tiny house on the periphery of campus, but it was very beautiful. It was kind of tucked into the woods and right on a path up to the Blue Ridge Mountains. And so I actually felt very lucky and was surrounded by a lot of support.
Yeah, that's great. So for listeners here who might not have heard of Warren Wilson, or maybe heard of it and I don't know what it is, so Warren Wilson is one of the significant examples of alternative higher education. I also would say one of the most beautiful campuses I've ever been to. It reminds me. I
Truly.
remember the first time I drove in there. I thought I was. It's the Ewok village from the third Star Wars movie or something like that. But can you say, how would you explain Warren Wilson to a person who really doesn't know anything about it?
I mean, I was really lucky while I was there. There was just about 500, 600 students, so it was still a very small college. It hadn't it I think their goal was 2,000 by 2,000. I don't know if they actually ended up doing that. But at the time I was there, was things the college was small and very communal. You knew everybody. Big farming focus. There was like the piggery and the gardens and a real lived experience, a lot of hands-on learning, a lot of connection with the soil sciences, but directly with things, not theoretically. So I appreciated, and you had to be on the recycling team. So you drove the trash truck and student-led cleaning. You know, everything was run by students. So we did all the cleaning of our own buildings. You were very involved in life, and they didn't let you just kind of intellectualize learning. There was this life skills and education woven together. I mean, it's part of the Work College Consortium, which Sterling College is part of. So all those colleges that really focus on the value of learning to work alongside your education.
Yeah, that's a really it's a really amazing list of schools people should be aware of, and Warren Wilson is certainly leading one. Sent we've had a number of students come from Warren Wilson to Thoreau College, and certainly from our school communities here, the Youth Initiative High School, where I've been a teacher. I think we have several alums there right now, so it's important. Yeah, Asheville to Viroqua, is an important connection.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I mean, as in the biography, I just shared, so the Heartbeat Life Sharing Community is a big part of that story, and you're one of the founders and mainstays for a long time. Heartbeat is part of the Camp Hill universe there. We've listeners of the podcast may have heard a couple of episodes back, Dan McCannon from the Harvard Divinity School, who's written a book about Camp Hill and introduced it. But yeah, tell us a little bit about Heartbeat and what the mission of that community has been.
So I was born and raised in Camp Hill in Kimberton Hills, which is a Camp Hill in Pennsylvania, a wonderful agricultural center, and a real a deep example of what Camp Hill can be over time. And I moved to Vermont to finish my last semester of college at Goddard. I had been a volunteer in Canada at a small community called Les Amitiés, House of Friends in French. And I was so inspired by their work with people with pretty significant challenges. It was not a Camp Hill, but it was Camp Hill inspired. And then I came down for my last semester and was piecing together my life as an adult, living with my husband at the time and our two kids. Just really struggling with what these nuclear settings that the world was advocating for, you know, your own little house, your own car, your own lawnmower, your own everything. And it just felt so wasteful. And a neighbor of ours was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember he didn't want us to help him because he couldn't pay us. And I felt really saddened and kind of distraught at that thought that money, that everything we do is exchange for capital and money, and we can't just be neighborly. Like the neighborliness and community element was missing. And at the same time, I was starting to look for jobs post college and recognized friends with special needs all over and around me, but who were really experiencing peripheralization. The police were being called on people who were just like loitering around, hoping someone would chat. And I felt really sad. I was started looking into Vermont. Where is the meaningful adult life for people with real vocational opportunities that are meaningful? And coming from Camp Hill, it's kind of like once you start knowing about organic food, it's hard not to eat organic food. It felt the same way for me. Like, I know better. I know something really special, and I need to make it happen here in Vermont. And there's so much community left in Vermont to build on. there's actually deep roots of community here. And so it wasn't hard to manifest it. I always say it was too hard and too easy. So it was really hard, but it was also too easy. But I was driven both by my own longing to live closely with the earth and eat food that we had grown, raise my family, and this idea of inclusion and dignified adult life for all people of all abilities. So, could all of that come together? And it did at Heartbeat.
I've said this. I said this in my conversation with Dan, but I mean, some of the couple of Camp Hill communities or Camp Hill inspired communities that I visited are just stand as a beacon of service and of really a fullness of human life, in terms of people serving each other, sharing their lives. You know, life sharing is all true. It's all, it expresses very clearly what's happening there, and it's a beautiful model of really living out a vocation for everyone there. You know, the different kind of categories of residents of a community, are really giving to each other in really profoundly beautiful ways. So, yeah. So say a bit more of the place, where Heartbeat was located, and that's roughly where you are now, right? In Vermont. In the
Oh, Vermonters are very particular. So Heartbeat is located up in the Northeast Kingdom of
Okay.
Vermont. It's a real area. And it's extremely rural with pockets of small towns. And Heartbeat is located kind of between Hardwick and Craftsbury on Route 14. And it's tucked up on the Old Town Farm. And when I was buying the land, when we were located where we would want to be, there was a Waldorf school very close by, the Walcott Waldorf School that's closed since then. And the community we were moving into was kind of a triangle of zero services. Hardwick was really considered kind of the armpit of Vermont, a not choice location. And the farm, I really felt like being where we were most needed seemed important. And we bought the town farm not knowing the history of town farms in Vermont, which was kind of the original social service system that the
Sure.
state designed. So that was really truly serendipity, not something we were aware of. And also Vermont, when it deinstitutionalized, it was very it struggled a lot with the concept of therapy and agriculture and land-based therapies, because there had been a lot of abuse and exploitation. So coming in and redefining land-based therapy and really looking at the value of nature as a therapy and nature studies and the right to nature, the human right to nature, took quite some conversations with the state. But it was, we're Heartbeat is now really widely respected and loved. And yeah, it's incredible. It's like five houses and a community center and an active farm and a wood shop. And it's, when you go there, it's, we call it the karmic loop. There's a wonderful walking loop and just truly amazing human beings just making life, keeping life real.
Yeah, could you expand on that idea of land-based therapy a little bit? That's a beautiful term.
Yeah, I mean, I really, in terms of what, when we think about human rights, I feel like we often forget that we have the right to nature. And a lot of rights are like the right to walk to a supermarket and access food and the right, but really this idea of the kind of natural geometry and gift of nature, especially when someone's struggling with behavior or overstimulation, that just taking a walk is therapeutic. Moving, lateralizing your body and moving your body and co-regulating with another human being out in nature in silence, I think is just so underestimated. And people wondered why, someone arrived at Heartbeat with a 16-page behavioral plan, didn't need a behavioral plan anymore. Like, it's like, well, that's nature-based therapy. We did a lot of picking bouquets and delivering them to houses and making dandelion chains and Learning how also the service element, like not just being, none of us want to be just takers. All of us want to feel needed. And that was kind of what I said at Heartbeat. If someone is away on vacation and they don't feel needed, people only feel relief they're away, we're doing something wrong. Then that person's whole world needs to be rethought of, because we need to be missed, we need to be wanted, and we need to be needed, you know, all human beings. And so building that into the program or system design or whatever you want to call it, that as a community, if someone, whatever their skills are, they become part of the fabric of how things flow and they feel that piece of life, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think one of the other really important functions and roles that these communities, life sharing communities, Camp Hills, have played in people's lives that I know of, is as a gap year, as a service opportunity for young people setting out on their young adulthood, between years of college or as a part of figuring out one's vocation, including some of our recent Thoreau College students have spent some time, summer stints or exploring longer stints at various Camp Hill communities. Can you talk about that, those roles or those opportunities that if people listening to this were thinking about what should I do after high school, after college, or as I set out to figure out my life, and what does it look like doing that, some of that at a community like Heartbeat?
Yeah, so the volunteer position is so precious. I wish every young person would take a year in any Camp Hill, to be honest. And there's 105 worldwide. It's a huge opportunity to see the world. I'm talking to someone who just got back from Agua Linda in Argentina, one of the newer Camp Hills that's getting off the ground. And Riverflow is a new community. It's just emergent, so it's one house. And the benefit of joining Riverflow is, wow, I get to see a nonprofit that is burgeoning and is just trying to get off the, you know, and to believe that we can do these things. We can actually start amazing intentional communities. That's a magical thing to know. Like, I'm not trapped by the systems that are out there. I can be creative. I can imagine the world forward in a way that I want it to be. And I think for young people, that's really important. And Heartbeat had that when we were starting. I think a lot of young people poured through Heartbeat because they wanted to know they weren't trapped in traditional systems that were very oppressive, and where labor is really sold, you know. So I think they were interested in this young couple who was just kind of like trying to change a broken system, be part of change. And the role of the coworker, what's I think is there's a couple pieces. Life is extremely rhythmical in Camp Hill. That's part of the rhythm. Rhythm replaces discipline in the sense that if you come in and you always put your shoes in your cubby, it becomes second nature, and then you don't trip over them in the hallway, right? So it's like the rituals and the rhythm of daily life, people. It runs very smoothly, and people experience that who come into the world. And I would say it's not utopia. There's nothing, it's really rhythm. Rhythm is the magic you're watching. But the coworkers are really, they could learn to cook, they learn to clean. And one of the most precious pieces is that they also do direct care with people who need their help. So sometimes it's brushing teeth or helping someone bathe. And I think that the vulnerability of someone depending on you often only really comes if you're a parent, right? And that first time you bathe your own child, or, and so there's this opportunity to learn the dignity of caring for another human being who's totally dependent on you. And it raises something inside you that is hard to raise in any other way. I watch it change people. And the incredible generosity that's developed and the true friendship is just like I've never seen it in anywhere else. It's so astonishing. Yeah, it's a special experience, and I think for a young person to glimpse into some future capacities, Campbell really offers that.
Yeah, I think what you say about rhythm is so important, and I think it, yeah, all of us living in the modern world, have struggled with disturbed rhythms, arrhythmias, and the support of a community is so helpful.
Oh,
Our students coming
totally.
in, whether they're coming out of a year in college or they're coming out of high school or between things, setting up like intentions to get up and go to sleep at a particular times, journaling, and particular meals, like that is often very top of mind for the students who come into our programs, and we certainly see it as one of our core missions in our gap semester programs is just setting up a daily, joining the beginning of the day with some singing and some observations of nature, some movement, meals together, just a rhythmic kind of pattern is something that people are deeply hungering and are increasingly very aware that they're missing, I would say, or at least the students and people who are coming to us. And I can see that, in the context where you're the work of service is so clear to your fellow community members at a place like a Camp Hill community, it's that's another a deepening of the sense of meaning. It's clear what you should be doing because it's right there.
Yeah, I also think, we're so attached to verbal communication. And I don't know if you've read the book And There Was Light by Jacques Lusseron,
So excellent
but
book, wonderful book, yeah.
excellent book, very worth, I recommend it. And also The Pollution of the Eye that he wrote. But he says, eyes are the seeing gesture is such an outward gesture. And it's like going out and touching the world, not physically, but through your sight. And when you lose that sight, there's this inner perspective that's developed. And he points, and I think that Camp Hill fosters that ability. Said it's not that you lose something, your perspective changes. He said, I'm so sick of blind people being treated like there's a deficit. He said, actually, we're enhanced. It's an enhanced other perspective. And so I think when I was reading this, I'm just finishing that. I've read it before, but that stood out to me as such an advocacy statement that in Camp Hill, you learn body language, you learn to read people beyond words and beyond what you're seeing, even. There's a kind of exchange that you and a different sensing of another human being that is fostered and developed and offered to you. And I think I notice people say, oh, people think I'm ask me what's special about me. Different coworkers have written, and I mean, they're doctors, they're not working in Camp Hill anymore, but people notice something is different about them. And I think they've developed a kind of sensitivity and ability to notice things in small ways that came out of their year in Camp Hill.
Yeah. So just people don't know that reference. Jacques Lusseron is a he was a scholar and writer, but he was blinded as a child, and then played a very active role in the French resistance to the German occupation during World War II, and in which his blindness was a special like gift actually that played into his role in that. And he's the book, And There Was Light is a really remarkable kind of a spiritual biography and also World War II autobiography, right, of his life. Very, talking about the capacities that are opened up when some other capacities are removed. It's a really great example of that. So you mentioned River Flow, your new project, and maybe you could introduce that a little bit. What's unique about this project, and also I think what you said about being involved at the beginning of something is really unique. That is always the mode that's called most to me. And so talk a bit more about the emergence of this new community.
So I had left Heartbeat. I got my master's degree in social work. I went into clinical social work, working with people struggling with addiction, and then found my way to Mansfield Hall, which is another very cool spot as their executive director in Burlington. It's a kind of a super dorm for neurodiverse, college capable, college curious students who just a fantastic crowd, both staff and students. And in Burlington, they attend UVM, St. Mike's, Lake Champlain, CCV. So it's a dorm that is it serves the students on a life skills level, and it serves the students in terms of supporting them educationally and their college career. And I was busy there, and then the state of Vermont said, we need more options. There was a study produced that said 602 adults with special needs are unhoused, and they just don't. And we're a small state. We shouldn't have that number. So I think the state is really just realizing they need to expand options. And a group of parents had started a parent advocacy group called DDHI, Developmental Disability Housing Initiative, that was really parent driven, saying, hey, where are the houses for our children? Like, what's going to happen here as we're getting older? Where do our children belong? Who will love our children? And I read an op-ed by Elizabeth Campbell, who I'm also friends with and had been friends with, and was just so deeply, deeply moved and experienced kind of a calling back to Camp Hill. Like, I loved my work at Mansfield Hall. I really didn't anticipate leaving that. But out of a real calling and a calling and listening to kind of what the future was asking for, I realized this is something I know how to do, and can really help with. So, got called into getting this off the ground and writing grants and gathering families and putting together a leadership group and finding land and filing a 501c3 and the whole real just boots on the ground, vision up. What would it look like for us to work with individuals with very significant developmental challenges and create meaningful, dignified adult life in community together? So we are such a cool group. Seneca Gonzalez was working at Camp Hill Hudson in their day program, working with their theater program and leading their fiber arts, and just a co-collaborator in their day program, art program. Very creative. Also lived with me for 12 years at Heartbeat. So we have a long history together, brings a lot of confidence to Riverflow for me. And my wife, my wonderful wife, River Parker, is also diving into the project and has been really boots on the ground around managing the building. So we bought this 30-acre property in Moncton that had been abandoned for, like, we think between 8 and 10 years. A huge 6,000 square foot house with 8 bedrooms that we was like just this almost unrecoverable building, but just recoverable enough to buy it and do it. So it's a really, really magical, magical spot that needed a lot of work. I mean, the perennial gardens are expansive. It's like a retreat land. Hundreds of thousands, probably over $100,000 worth of perennial beds, but like so covered up by weeds that you have to like carefully look for everything and like pull the grapevines off the quince bushes and pull the goldenrod back so you can find the hostas. And but it's been so fun, and so many work crews and volunteer crews, and the Moncton community has just shown up in droves with such positivity and just one signpost after another of gratitude, like people just being so excited about this coming. So, we've been kind of checking those signposts that tell you yes or no, and every single one is a yes, like, yes, do this. So I feel like our collaborators are out there and really cheering us on. We had to raise close to $1 million in a year, and we've been just hammering away at it. And Vermont, the state of Vermont's been very supportive. We've gotten some two big state grants, and Act 186 was the first grant that gave us the initial planning funds. So we've really felt supported all the way around by everybody.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you to be a person who's done this once before and to start over and do it again in a new place is, yeah, that's not everyone has that in them, even if they have it, to do it the first time. So yeah, that says something about your vocation, your calling, to your dedication to it. So if there's a young person hearing this who is says, wow, that's I'm excited about this idea, what are the qualities or skills or the dispositions that you think that you're looking for would make a great fit for what you're doing for a Camp Hill in general, and maybe specifically the kind of startup phase that you're in there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Camp Hill can really, the bigger, older Camp Hills can absorb anybody. I always say if you're an introvert, you really have to figure out how to make community work because you have to f step away, find the way, find po the possibilities for stepping away and build a schedule that allows you that in-breath. And I think it community in general can be more complicated for introverts, and they're so needed. I have to say, my colleagues that are introverts are they're my balancer. They say just the right thing when I'm really out of whack. It's amazing. So it's community needs introverts. So please come, even if you're an introvert, and know you're desperately needed. You balance everything in community.
Can I pause right there? Introverts, that's such an interesting point. I mean, I would observe there are more people who are identifying as or like owning their identity as introverts in a way, and I do think that they are powerful, parts of a community. And as an extrovert, like it definitely, like it's been like it's something that I need to always like work on, actually. And so, do you have any insights as a community leader, community former, of like how do you make a community welcoming and really appreciative of its introverts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, in traditional Camp Hills, a lot of us have built larger homes, so that can by its own nature be challenging just to live in the hub of a buzzing big home. And I've been thinking a lot about maybe putting a few tiny homes for staff and coworkers that love to be supportive but just need the peace and quiet of a separate space. And so I've been thinking, because here we are, we're at the beginning, we get to design this to be
Right.
inclusive of all people. And I've really been thinking about the introvert. And I think a lot of introverts stay for like 3 to 7 years and then leave because it's just like too much. It's like too overwhelming. But then you also get these Camp Hills full of all extroverts, and that is out of balance. That is not a good plan. So it's like I've really been thinking, how do we build this because of the privileged beginning spot we're in? Can we think about people who may not want to live right in the hub of a big home, but really want to be in the intentional community and really feel called to the service part of it?
Yeah,
So I'm kind of
many.
imagining tiny homes
Many
scattered around
of
the
the
bigger homes.
introverts I know are the most patient people I know too, and that seems like patience is a
Truly.
quality that's very valuable in any kind of a community, and certainly a community of people who are diverse and neurodiverse and differently abled in different ways.
Yeah, good listeners, often really the people who do the reflective listening back into the community. And they can often be the accountable, account holders of like, nope, this is how it actually went down, because they were listening and watching and taking it all in versus just like being in the middle of it all. As someone who tends to be in the middle of, I think qualities we're looking for are human beings that are interested in exploring alternative lifestyles, are asking questions about what does it mean to be human today and how do we live more gently on this earth, who are really asking the environmental questions, but also are really open to kind of alternative economic structures, are curious about how to do money differently than it has been done, and think about wealth distribution. How do we live with in a more income sharing capacity, where we're not thinking about my money. And I love in Camp Hill, one of the powerful images in Camp Hill is that, I shouldn't focus on keeping my own light lit. I should focus on those around me and notice if their light is lit. but also count that my community members are noticing mine. So that in this, if you're interested in building that mutual reciprocity and care for each other, that Camp Hill's a great spot to come to.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
it's skill building because we're not taught in very many places.
That's right. Could you talk a little bit about the way that money works at Riverflow and at Camp Hills in general, and how does that the financial aspect of this life sharing community work?
Yeah, I mean there's many ways of being connected to Camp Hill financially. There are paid employees that work administratively, nurses, all one-on-one support people that come during the day, and though there is a traditional employment model, and then within the community, for people who are living within the community, there's also an income sharing capacity, which means that you are your basic needs are met by the community. So your room and board, and you have 4 weeks of vacation, and you have access to a car, and all these the benefits of the community life, homegrown food. And then you also, so traditionally there's a stipend that comes for a first year volunteer, a second year volunteer, a third year volunteer. Those stipend levels change. And then if you're staying beyond 3 years, it's a conversation around what that stipend looks like based on your needs. So it's much more needs driven than any other model that I know, where people get to really state what their needs are and the community works based on individual need. And we're also aware of each other. So let's say somebody's grandfather is very ill and they can't afford a ticket to Europe. It's not uncommon for the community to circle that person and everybody contribute. And so instead of it being my money, your money, there is a sense of communal money and communal responsibility for each other.
Yeah, I think that that's a it is a really powerful aspect of being a part of a community like one of these. And I definitely I see from young people a real eagerness to explore different ways for money to work in our lives. And especially thinking about people, young adults who are starting out without necessarily any assets, and our society is laying them down with debt a lot of times these days. But and also people with disabilities, I think there's never been a society that seems to have less supports for people like that than ours. Even as you mentioned, the town farms and so forth. We have those here in Wisconsin too, historically. And this without those kind of structures, it really becomes a question how a person is supposed to exist in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think one piece is that our world values us for what we do, not for who we are. And that is very complicated because for a person with developmental disabilities, and there's such a wide, I really want to talk about the vast spectrum of what that means. But for someone with very significant developmental disabilities, they don't fit our traditional work models. And their value, it can easily look like we don't value them because we can't see the work they're going to do. And what is so amazing in intentional communities where individuals are included is the con their contribution is so obvious and celebrated. And yeah, that's the exciting part for me in Camp Hill.
Can you say a bit more about the range of abilities or a range of kind of conditions that people are coming into one of these communities with?
Yeah, I mean, I know people always want a diagnosis. They want to know what's going on. And I think and then there's also the reality that in Camp Hill, it's very hard to tell who are the coworkers and who are the friends, because all of a sudden we're all mingled and we're all busy and we're all doing the work. And you have frequently have a guest say, "Is that person a coworker? Is that person a friend?" Or I was like, "Do you really care? Like, we're community members. Like, who cares? Like, let just be amazed that you can't tell."
Exactly.
And so I think Yeah, I think the spectrum of ability is enormous, and there are people who need every help with everything from bathing, eating, dressing, to very capable individuals who really run the community and take tremendous pride in being leaders within certain vocational areas, for instance, farming or fiber arts or baking and life skill leadership. Culinary, even we have a lot of interest in kind of the healing arts, so teas and remedies, so are kind of in the herbal, homeopathic, naturopathic remedy making. It's amazing. Like, it just depends on who's coming in, what their capacities are, what their interests are, and that's usually what drives the community's vocational development. So, like at Riverflow, we have two people who are clearly land-based lovers and animal lovers. Like, definitely we'll have to get chickens and animals. There's no, these two guys are just like, that's what they want to do with their life, and that's what they're going to call us to have a small farm for sure. And then one of those individuals also is deeply connected to artistry, like fine detailed, incredibly a focused kind of needlepoint level work. So we'll be, a lot of the programming is designed by the interests of the individuals. I really want to learn about mosaicing. I have a feeling this individual is going to really love mosaic work, the detail of fitting things together. So,
I think in a
yeah.
sense, in addition to the land-based therapy, the agriculture, the just exposures to plants and animals and the natural world, you can see that arts, the craft, the handcrafts and are also really a beautiful and important part of many of these of Camp Hill communities that I've visited, and what does that bring into the life of the community to be engaged with that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just the warmth of the environments and the wood shop at Heartbeat. I mean, and also a lot of the Camp Hills have these incredible wood shops. The woodworking and working with wood therapeutically is so, also the smell of a wood shop and the beauty of the wood cutting boards and incredible shelf making and desk making and ch Adirondack chair making. I mean, a lot of the things I see coming out are just so spectacular and fun to watch. And I love the pride in people when they've produced and been part of producing something beautiful for the world.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's something that can bring people together. Of all kind of backgrounds and previous experiences for sure. Be able to make something beautiful and to share it with the community. If folks are interested in what you're doing, how can they find out about it? And what's your kind of time frame? And when what's the next steps in your project?
We hope to open October 7th. We still have a one spot open for a volunteer position at Riverflow. And that would be a residential coworker, 1 year coworker spot. And if someone feels called, they can just stay forever and be part of making this happen. And they can contact myself, and that you can find me on the website at Riverflow. So it's riverflowcommunity.org.
We'll link this in the show notes too for this.
Yeah, and I would just reach out to me and reach out. There's also a coworker application page on the website that you can go apply right through the website as a volunteer.
Are there any
Yeah.
particular like interests or skill sets or like expertise that you're really looking for or feel like you might be, are lacking at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we need a farmer. We need someone who wants. We have a big chicken coop that can hold 20 chickens being delivered next week. And
Be farmer soon.
And then I just we're kind of dreaming up a farm manager, someone who we have the capacity to build a post and beam barn and a farmhouse kind of on 5 acres that are tucked back on the back half of the more agricultural field section of the land. And someone, but we don't want to really move with that until we have someone who feels really called to that land development, you know, taking on. And we're going to be a biodynamic farm. We really want to be organic biodynamic. So someone who's interested in developing the land and really building out the land-based program.
And the the quality of the food, it goes the right hand in hand with the quality of the rhythm of the day and of the year, and the quality of the physical spaces. I mean, the food that is produced in these communities is top best, it's highest quality and biodynamic and organic food and from well-tended land. And so that certainly is it's an important value from what I can tell.
Totally. I always say food is another way to tell time. And when your senses don't give you like the capacity to read a clock, you know, when you're, oh, it's apple cider pressing time, it's apple picking time, it's harvesting the squash time, it's digging the potatoes. Oh, it's fall. You know, like there's just food can also be a way of telling time.
And I think many people, with some forms of disabilities are end up, spending time in hospitals or other institutions and where the food is notably bad. And that can't be helpful. Institutionalized food is the worst. So I think that's a another just a humanization of being in a place like a Camp Hill where, where you are respected in that dimension as well.
Yeah, that your body, I know, and the health outcomes in Camp Hill are not discussed, but are tremendously different than traditional outcomes for people with neurodiversity. And that very much is connected. I always say it's yes, it's the food we eat. It's also the joy of life itself. You know, I think the national statistics on health outcomes is not good. So I would love to see a real research study on that. Someday, somebody, maybe that's who we're looking for.
Researcher, yeah, design, research and design, yeah. Wonderful. Well, Hannah, is there other things that you think that we should know about what your work there and about the RFO community that as it forms?
Just that we're looking for inspired collaborators that want to join Riverflow, and we're going to be building 3 to 4 additional homes on the property. We're in the middle of designing that, and that will also include a small community center and craft space, and also a barn and a farmhouse. So we will need quite a few additional long-term carrying members of the community, as well as short-term volunteers who want to be the flow through the seasons. But I think we're looking for probably 4 additional families to join us that are interested in long-term. And we're near to the Champlain Waldorf School. So one of our commitments is that, you know, people coming towards us have access to Waldorf education for their children.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing about what your work is, and thank you for your lifetime of service to people. And yeah, it's so exciting to hear about it. Thank you for sharing.
My gosh, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. And I'm also just so amazed by Thoreau College. I mean, I connected with you because I reached out and just so grateful that Thoreau is out there doing
Thank
its
you.
work.